All right, here we are with episode 101 of the Florida Trail Runners Podcast. And what a week it has been. You know, you got the Keys 100, the Cruel Jewel. But hey, for this one, we are back at the Cocodona 250. And this will be part one of the stories from the Cocodona 250. And on the chat, we've got four of your eight Floridians. We got Justin Davis, Seth Talala, Kevin Coughlin, and Derek Kirkman. These dudes absolutely crushed it out there. I'm talking three buckles and a huge distance PR. So hey, let's just jump right into it with part one of the Cocodona 250.
Hey, Joseph, how are you?
Good. Hey, Derek.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
Hey, Kevin.
Yep, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, but, you know, hey, first off, how are you guys feeling from Cocodona?
I feel great, man.
Good.
Yeah, I feel good.
Yeah, fully recovered.
Yeah, already back running?
Yeah.
That's why I think, like, for these 200-plus mile races, like, I think you do get a little bit more recovery. Like, I don't know, active recovery, somewhat recovery.
Yeah, definitely take it a little easier throughout the whole race.
Yeah, so, hey, I guess we should kick it off with, you know, a little background. You know, what's your running history?
Well, started running just a couple years ago. Ran a couple marathons, did 50K, and then now it's getting a little out of control. But yeah, I'll see where it goes from here.
All right, it's Kevin here. I started running, like taking it seriously about 9 years ago when I turned 30, and that was what I wanted to do, was run a marathon as like a bucket list goal. And then I found trail running and really took to that. And I've only done a couple of hundreds, but just in like 24 hour events. And then my wife and I set up a nonprofit, and I started running like multi-day events for that, raising money for family. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
It's funny how the marathon tends to suck a lot of people in.
Yeah, it's a gateway drug, man.
I've done one marathon and I'm one and done. I got my goal and I'm like, okay, back to the trail I go.
Yeah. The first marathon I ever did was one of the toughest ones I've done. I was so beat up at walk. I think I was just pushing like that much harder just for that one, you know?
It's so hard so fast.
Yeah, exactly.
This is Derek. I started running ultras in 2019 with the Keys 100. That was the first race. I just figured I'd throw myself right into 100 miles. And that one, I DNF'd it like 60, at mile 60, I think it was at the far end of 7 Mile Bridge. And then did Pinellas Trail a couple times. And then this year, I pretty much picked up most of my races with Javelina and Long Haul and Lost 118. And then decided to do Cocodona.
Dang. So Keys was your first one?
Yeah.
That's brutal, man.
Hey, it's Justin. I started running in high school. I've been a casual runner for basically my whole life. And then I had no interest in running long distances, but a friend talked me into running a marathon at the end of 2018. And then I was, you know, not happy with how we did. So decided I was going to run a marathon every month for all of 2019. So did that and then was done with running for a while. And then one of my good friends talked me into running a 50K last January. And then from then, you know, similar story. It's just been out of control. Trying to figure out, you know, what the next distance is. And if, you know, you can run a 50K, then you do a 100K and then a 100 miler. And, you know, here we are.
When does it stop?
Yeah. Hopefully soon.
There's got to be something over 250.
Don't tell my wife if there is.
Yeah, right. No.
And that's like the thing too, right? Like all of a sudden you're going 250 miles. You know, how did you even choose, you know, the Cocodona 250?
For me, Kevin, it just kind of worked out with our travel plans this year. You know, I had seen it come up, you know, when it started probably 3 years ago, and I just kind of kept my eye on it. And I knew this year we're going to be traveling out through Arizona again, and the timing was just perfect, and we had 3 weeks out there, and I just really wanted to see if I could do it. I guess, yeah, it was just the next thing on there. It just intrigued me, you know, those people watching videos from the years previous of people doing it. So I just really wanted to see if I could.
It's a great vacation spot too.
Oh man, it's the best. It's been our favorite so far. Yeah.
So Seth here, I did Moab last year. And so I figured the next step after 240 miles is 280 miles. That's why I did it.
And this is Derek. I watched the YouTube videos on Cocodona, and I just kind of wanted to experience everything for myself. And right before Javelina, because there had been a long break in between me running that before Javelina and my four ultras that I had going on, I decided to sign up for Cocodona. That way I wasn't, the pain of running 100 miles wasn't fresh in my mind, and I couldn't really back out. So I signed up for Cocodona before everything, and yeah, going out for Javelina, I loved Arizona. So it's a great place to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, it was kind of similar. You know, I was watching the coverage over the last, you know, the previous two events. And then I was just in a place physically and mentally where I was ready to, you know, try and do that distance. And Cocodona was coming up, and there's no lottery. I could just sign up and be ready for it. And just kind of fit the timing, right?
Yeah, it's funny how those videos like just kind of suck you right in. Because I know when I was graduating college, cause I ran, you know, college cross country, and I was just like, man, you know, I still want to keep running. And that was back when Jamil was doing his his vlogs, and I was like, all right, trail running, that looks awesome, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like Air Vipa's videos are just so good.
Yeah
they do a good job.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know a lot of people, you know, they run for something. Either it's like the challenge, the YouTube video, you know, the enjoyment, or, for, you know, for some other people, you know, you kind of have like a drive behind, you know, why you took on all the miles. You know, what were you running for out there at Cocodona?
I love to eat.
Yeah, man, I haven't stopped eating since then, man.
Oh,
yeah.
Non-stop. Middle of the night.
Yeah. Well, for me, like I said, we have a nonprofit, so that's a big motivator for me, and it really, really helps me to be able to keep pushing and keep going. It's raising money for families, yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw that post. What's that all about?
Yeah, so it's called 2 Feet for Good, and it started a few years back before we left Connecticut, and we just raised money for families for like medical bills, medical expenses, equipment, stuff that insurance is either fighting them on, or stuff they need immediately. So we just try and help a couple families a year with whatever we can in those kind of situations.
That's super cool, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, you raised a lot of money.
Yeah, we raised probably close about $4,000 for a family this year, just you know, in the last few months. When I officially signed up for Coconuts, when we kind of set it up, and yeah, there's a family and that we met, or that we know of, that's another traveling family, and I think they're in Florida still. And the mother, after having their fifth child last year, found out she has stage 4 breast cancer.
Wow.
So yeah, they're trying doing everything they can right now, and she's fighting strong. So yeah, trying to help them out a bit.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Good for you,
man. I wish I had a reason like that. Yeah, I'm still just trying to figure out what it is. I keep going back for more, though.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, you can't just sign up on a whim for Cocodona. Well, I guess some people do. But, you know, when did it mentally, you know, set in that, like, yeah, this is real. Like, I'm actually going for 250 miles. Like, oh, crap, this is not a 100-miler.
I actually was, I work on ships, so I travel all over for that. I was out of town in Norfolk, Virginia for the month before, and I flew straight from Virginia to Arizona for the race. And that was, once I landed in Arizona, I was like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, for me, similar. It was just like we left Florida and we slowly were driving across, you know, going west, and it didn't feel real until, yeah, we got into Arizona. I was like, oh man, yeah, it was like instant. As soon as we got to Arizona, I was like, oh yeah.
See those big old mountains?
Yeah, I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just asking the other guys what their training is like for elevation living in Florida. Because I run up and down the trash dump. I don't know about you guys. About 40 feet a gain.
Yeah, I know there wasn't much on my training runs. It was very limited. I don't think I made it out to like Sugarloaf Mountain or anything to run up and down that. And I didn't go out to the Clay Loop to run around that. So it was pretty much everything around South Orlando, Lee Vista area, and some of the areas downtown. And that was about the extent of the elevation training that I got.
Yeah, I actually bought a treadmill to get some incline training in, and the motor for the incline doesn't work. So they said they were going to send me a new motor for it so that I could get some incline, and it still hasn't come in. So it was a great investment.
It's perfect for hanging clothes, though.
Yeah.
And kind of with that, you know, did you have a game plan for how you're going to tackle Cocodona?
Originally, until about, I don't know, 45 minutes into the first day. But I guess right from the beginning, it was just like, go real easy, go slow. There's no, you know, it's just, I know it's nothing that I've ever done before, anything like that. You know, I've never done anything in the mountains like that. So I knew just go easy, keep eating, keep drinking, and eventually just you'll get there.
Yeah, I'm extremely comfortable in the back of the pack, so I just let everybody go. Yeah. Bring up the rear.
Yeah, that was my mentality also, just keep it slow. I mean, with the generous cutoff times that they have, you can average 30-minute miles and still finish, so just take it slow at first and go from there.
Yeah, I mean, that first 50K was... I was doing 30-minute miles.
Right.
Brutal.
I think that first 50K is when I realized that my entire plan I had laid out was not going to work at all.
Yeah. And then the next 50K, that next plan you came up with doesn't work again.
Yeah, because like, that's the big thing. You just kind of have to ride the lightning and see what actually happens.
Yeah.
You guys sleep much at all during it? Or
I got probably about 9 hours total, I think.
It's probably right around where I was at, too. A couple hours each night.
Probably about the same. I didn't sleep first until 45 hours in, and then after that I was able to take...
Oh my god.
Three naps after that. Yeah, I couldn't sleep. After the first 2 days, then I was able to sleep like every 20-ish hours or so. Like, you know, basically then every night after that. But I couldn't sleep the first day. I think, you know, adrenaline and caffeine and whatever else was too strong.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is figuring out like the caffeine balance.
Oh yeah, there was no balance. There was just keep the intake coming.
I like the idea of like purging your system of caffeine a couple weeks out. I've never done that, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, it seemed to work because I drink a lot of coffee, and you know, it doesn't seem to have much effect on me. So I tried cutting back, you know, a week or two before, and man, I don't know. Maybe it was the adrenaline, but I was fucking zooming.
Were you hallucinating pretty good?
No, actually, for my first 100-miler, I had bad hallucinations, but this one, I didn't have any the whole time. I felt great. And every time I thought that I wanted to stop and sleep, I'd lay down for, you know, 20 minutes or something and not feel tired and just decide to get up and keep going until.
Wow. Yeah. You guys see like Fane Ranch area running through those random fields?
That was my least favorite part, probably.
You guys see those birds? Like those ground birds?
Uh-uh. No.
Okay. Nope. So
those are hallucinating.
I didn't know if they were real or not. But I don't know. Somebody else saw them too. So yeah, they were hallucinating or they were real.
You know, the sleep is a funny thing too, because I know from at least just from watching the tracker and hearing from crews and some of the wives, hey, should, you know, how often do people sleep during these things? You know, some of y'all got, yeah, like what you just said, a lot more sleep than others.
I feel like a couple hour nap just makes it's
for sure.
Me anyway. Yeah. It's like just brings so much life back into me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I think I slept every night.
Yeah.
Yeah, Justin, when did you figure out like, maybe I should sleep?
After climbing down Mingus Mountain on those shitty fucking rocks. If I saw one more rock, I was going to lose my goddamn mind. And at that point, my caffeine gummies had worn off and I was just fucking exhausted. And so, you know, that 3 hour nap right there was a game changer down in Jerome.
Yeah, so obviously with like, you know, sleep deprivation, you know, there's that huge aspect, but you know, what about the sun? Because I know like here in Florida it's hot and sunny like most of the time of the year, but you know, what's it like out in Arizona?
I thought it was not bad at all. I think being from Florida really, I mean, at least speaking for me, prepared very well for the heat. The, you know, it was dry heat, and but you know, not a factor for me at all.
Yeah, I feel the same way as that. I think the humidity from the East Coast is so much worse than you know. I was in Sedona during the middle of the day and it was hot, but it was way more manageable than some of the times in the humidity in the East Coast for sure. It wasn't really an issue, yeah.
Absolutely. The temperature swings were pretty wild, though.
Yeah, that was new.
Yeah, I think the key with that was to stay covered up. I was wearing long sleeves, like a big sun hat. Neck was covered.
Yeah. Mm.
Seemed to help a lot for me anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like you've got the sun, but you know, what are the trails like out there? Because I already know it's covered with like a ton of these sharp, loose rocks.
Yeah. I used a lot of like some of like the all those like small boulders and whatnot. I just used it as an excuse to walk.
Yeah.
Like this isn't runnable.
Yeah, and you spend all your time climbing up the mountain thinking, hey, once we get to the top we can run down the other side to get to the other side. And it's all loose rocks or the road's completely washed out where you can't get like a good even footing, so you're kind of like hopping back and forth between one side and the other side, and it was there wasn't really a good point where you could just get going and start running there for a long point there in the very beginning.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was cool with it.
Yeah,
how about the boulders at Watson Lake?
Oh, fuck.
Trying to scale those things.
I think probably had I not gone through that at night, it might have been a little bit better. Ooh. But that was like one of the first things I hit. The sun had just gone down just as I hit that. And I was trying to follow somebody else through it. And it was a mess.
Yeah, so when I was going through it, the sun was just starting to go down. And I saw the glow sticks. And I was thinking, what poor bastard has to do this? So apparently it was you.
But that was me. That road coming out of the Dells was pretty nice, though. I got a lot of sleep while I was running there. I had never used poles before, and running down that road, I had gotten pretty good at using poles, and I would pretty much just drift off into a dream, and then I'd be like, oh, wait a second, this person can't possibly be here, and then I'd wake back up, and I'm still running down the road.
Yep, still here. And I feel like with that, you know, did you ever get to a point you're like, dude, like, I can't even walk right now?
Day two, maybe? I mean, yeah, like, for me, I'll stiffen up at times, especially aid stations, sit down too long, stiffen up, but just keep moving, and it shakes itself out, usually.
Yeah, I felt good for most of it. I had a calf strain at some point, but for the most part, my legs felt fine.
Yeah, same. I think it was just, like, the slower pace. It was, you know, like you said, you'd lock up at the aid stations or after taking a nap, but... Yeah, not never a point where I felt like I couldn't move anymore.
I actually had a large callus on the bottom of my foot that started giving me trouble towards the end. It wasn't anything crazy, but it was starting to get pretty painful. Maybe like one more. If we had to go one more day, it probably would have been an issue. 6 days, not five.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of like the hard part is how do you even like, because you got to take care of your feet. Like you got to kind of recover at some point.
I think like for like blisters anyways, for me, I gotta stay on top of them. I keep, you know, pull over side of the trail, take the shoes off, pop the blisters, stay on top of it.
What about you guys? Well, did you guys do anything special for that?
I was fortunate enough to not have any. I had two little blisters day two that taped up and never caused me any issues, and I could feel one start to come on when Kevin and I were heading up towards Mount Eldon. But at that point, I had compression socks on, and we were close enough to the finish line that I just said, fuck it, whatever happens here is going to happen. I'm not trying to get these socks off right now.
Yeah, same. I didn't have too many issues. I had a couple of small blisters, but nothing that, you know, I was ever concerned about. I knew I would just take care of it the next aid station, pop it, tape it up, and go ahead. My feet were pretty okay throughout.
Yeah, I think mine were doing pretty well. I was starting to get some blisters on the bottom of my feet, but when I ended there at Sedona and stuff, I think probably if I had to continue, it may have been more of an issue, but ending there at Sedona and stuff, it kind of, the blisters I did have really didn't cause any issues.
Yeah, so I guess kind of coming into race week, you know, I think like what, one of you drove all the way out there, some of y'all flew out there. What's the pre-race like out there? I know you show up, you get your bibs, you get that photo taken of you, you know, what's the pre-race like?
Yeah, like I said, we drove out there, and we were out there 2 weeks early, so it was kind of nice, you know, to relax and get some hiking in that area. And then I ended up sleeping at the start line. I reached out to somebody that was coming down from Flagstaff, and they picked me up in Cottonwood, brought me down to the start. So I had a tent, and I brought a beach float to lay on as a mattress, and it had a huge hole in it. So I started off with a deficit of sleep, I think, on the first night, but I don't know if I would have slept that much anyways, but it was kind of cool to be able to sleep right there at the start and just be up and get ready to go.
Yeah, I flew in 2 days before and stayed in closer to Phoenix, and then went and picked up a little RV that my dad and sister drove around to follow us around in. It was nice getting there a couple days before to have some, you know, prep time and get everything, get all the bags ready and all that stuff squared away.
That wasn't your RV that the exhaust got ripped off.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was.
Oh no.
Yeah. Got a hole in the gas tank, but luckily, that was the last day, so we were done with it anyways. Could have pushed it off the side of the mountain for all I cared.
Now, hold on. What happened?
I told you me and Justin had some stories.
Yeah. This is the you know, the least eventful one. So it was when, I don't know, Kevin, where were we coming into? We were...
Walnut?
Yeah. We were running through the night from Fort Tuthill to Walnut, and my sister was driving the RV and came up, you know, whatever dirt road up to the top of the mountain or whatever the hell we were. And she ended up going over this rock or something that was got underneath the van and put a hole in the gas tank and ripped a bunch of shit out from underneath it and spilled gas all everywhere right after she filled it up on my credit card. And so, you know, we get back and we're looking for like a nice warm place to sleep in the van. And we got a van just surrounded by gasoline. And you know, it was, so it was something, but didn't have a warm place to sleep. And, you know, whatever. Get to wait for that bill to come in.
Make sure a good story.
Yeah, fuck.
The deposit is not coming back.
Yeah. They specifically said that the insurance covers everything except for the very top of the van and the very bottom of the van.
Oh, no.
It was perfect.
Well, if it makes you feel better, my dad saw that, and then he turned his van around.
Yeah, good. Good call. I'm going to charge you a finder's fee for that.
But, I mean, eventually you pick up your bibs, right? Because I know the whole Air Viper thing, it's like, it's the thing to see.
Yeah, that was kind of a scary moment, getting your photo taken. And
Yeah,
I think that's probably really when it kicked in. We're driving there to get the bibs.
Yeah, and I was like, you pick up your bib and they take that picture right away, and I'm like, I can't look too excited right now because I know they're taking another picture at the end of this thing. If I look way different, you know. But it is cool. I mean, they do a great job.
Oh, yeah.
Everything, like you said, from the footage, all that stuff, to constantly posting, you know, everything is, yeah, it was really cool for, especially for our families to follow and, you know, be able to reach out to us like in real time, like, hey, you're at this mileage, or, you know, we saw you come through that aid station on the live feed. Was super cool.
Yeah.
Except for the live feed guy followed me for like the last entire mile, so I had to run. Yeah. I heard so bad.
Yeah, that was a really tough climb, and coming down that was no easy task either, man. That fire road coming down was tough.
Oh, it was brutal. Yeah. For some reason in my head, I thought I could run that entire last 8 miles. Nope.
Yeah, and you're like, you know, coming into race morning, you know, you're all out in that big corral, you know, you're surrounded by all the people, and you know, what's it like at the start of the Cocodona 250? You know, what's going through your mind?
My uncle actually flew in from Boston and surprised me at the start line, so took away like all my pre-race anxieties. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And for me sleeping there, it was just kind of like, I just gave myself enough time to get up, get ready, and kind of be there and ready to go. I didn't want to leave myself too much time, I guess, to like sit around and think or those kind of things. So for me, it was just kind of, I mean, it was exciting, but it was like, there was like, I guess maybe a weird tension kind of at the beginning, I think. You know, for a lot of people, it's a new thing, and you know, everybody had just gotten up. It's still dark, and we got a big day in front of you. So
it's almost like stress relieving, though. Once you start,
mm-hmm.
cross that line is on the trail. It's like, okay, you only have one thing to do now: run.
Yeah, that's true. Because you know, coming into the race, you know, I guess you know we'll break this down day by day. And coming into day one, but I feel like you know day one is just so full of excitement. You know, you got all the people around you. You've got a pack. But how did day one go for y'all?
Well, for me, day one went a lot slower than I was thinking it was gonna. Heading up the mountain, it was a lot warmer, a lot hotter than I was expecting. And I wasn't moving too overly fast, but I was keeping up with a lot of the people. But yeah, I think that first initial climb took a lot out of me. And then I kind of realized that my plans were quickly going to have to be rewritten. And unfortunately, since I was crewing myself and there was nobody else there. I was trying to figure out how I'm going to adjust to this, where I've only got access to a couple of things that I need. And being that I'm moving a lot slower than planned, I had to make some different arrangements.
Yeah, I was just taking it super, super easy. I started with a buddy from Texas, and so we did the first 45 miles together. So we're just chatting and whatnot. So time went by pretty quick. Yeah, it's good though.
Yeah, it's kind of same for me. It helped to have all those people in the beginning to kind of pass that time. Because, you know, you're picking your way up that mountain and through all those rocks, and you know, you still kind of get rid of the excitement of starting. Other than forgetting to put electrolytes in my pack for that first 37 miles, went all right.
Like the worst section to forget.
Yeah. I was like, "Are you freaking serious? What the fuck?" But I did find some. I stashed some salt tabs in a little baggie, so I was able to make it through okay. But and I was going super slow in the beginning, so it wasn't too bad. It was all right.
You guys have to filter water at all?
Yes.
Yeah, same. Like a filter, like a liter.
That was probably one of my favorite parts of the first day, was standing there drinking the water out of that stream.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, that was so cold, man. It felt so good just standing in that stream down there. Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know those first 30-some miles, like that's kind of the hardest part for Coconut.
Yeah, but I feel like they did a good job at least preparing us ahead of time. So for me, I didn't feel like it was as bad because my expectations were that it was going to be terrible. And so, you know, I think they did a good job like preparing everybody to take it easy. So, you know, for me, at least the first, you know, 33 miles or whatever it was, I didn't run a single step. I just hiked the whole thing knowing that it was going to be that bad. And, you know, luckily it was you know, we were able to manage our expectations because they were so, you know, gave us so much warning ahead of time about how shitty it is.
Could you imagine being blindsided by that?
Yeah, holy shit. I would have started off running and like a fucking jackass.
Yeah, because I was watching the live feed and this dude out at the aid station, the water station, this dude had grapes. Did any of you guys get some frozen grapes?
Oh no, I want some right now.
Yeah, no, but the popsicles were good.
Yeah, the popsicles. That guy was hilarious, man.
The rocket pops.
Yeah. I called the popsicles and he scolded me like a teacher.
Man, yeah, speaking of that, did you guys try any Flota?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that the can, the purple can?
Yeah.
The purple can with Versteeg on it?
Yeah, I never tried it.
Oh, man. Good. The ad for that is golden.
I mean, it's exactly what you think it is. It's flat soda. That's what it tastes like.
I feel like the best part about drinking soda while running, though, is burping afterwards.
Yeah, so coming into day two, and obviously for like these longer races, you know, it's the mental battle in day two. You know, you just got to stay in the fight, and, you know, you just got to make sure what's the miles ahead, you're not going to get overwhelmed by them. You know, how did day two go down?
I was hurting pretty bad that morning, but was that mile 71? We saw crew. I actually brought this like portable shower bag thing, and that was the ticket, the absolute ticket. So take a quick shower, soap up, slept for like 2 hours, and I was good as new. Yeah, just getting clean and change of clothes, that was great.
It feels like 6 months ago, because I don't remember where the hell I was on day two.
It's all kind of a blur.
Yeah, for me, good still in day two. I had come into Whiskey Row.
Oh, yes.
Somewhere shortly after sunrise, and my original plan was to sleep there, but I had quit coffee for, you know, a couple weeks before the race and caffeine, and just still felt good and kept going. it wasn't until going around Grand Hills and Boulder feeling like it and sleep. But then I ended up getting the Fane Range, was planning on sleeping there, but it was like really to Mingus Mountain before decided to sleep after that. That put me, you know, basically through 2 days.
Do you regret waiting that long to sleep or no?
No, I was worried that I was going to because I thought I was going to be required to sleep and catching up, but like 3 or 4 hours of sleep after that was like plenty and I felt great afterwards. But I laid down at Fane Ranch for about an hour to try sleep and wasn't able to fall asleep. But I think just laying down and resting my legs a little bit gave me, you know, a little bit of recovery to be able to make it up and down Mingus. I didn't feel tired at that point for whatever reason, which was weird. But
yeah, for me, day two was pretty uneventful up until going up Mingus, and that just wiped me out. It was getting later. I was just ahead of Justin because he came into the aid station up at the top there right after me, and that one was tough to leave because that one had the cabins and the showers, I believe. And I just wanted to get down to Jerome, so I laid down for a few at the aid station, and then I started headed out right before sunset. But I was in pretty rough shape.
Yeah, that sucked.
It was tough. It was really tough because you could see Jerome, you could see a few headlamps, and there's like nobody's getting anywhere. It just looks like people are going in circles out there. It was brutal. It took forever. Yeah. So I slept at Jerome, I think, for about three and a half hours in a little hammock out there, and that was awesome.
I ended up stopping at Camp Kippa and took a nap, got some food, and a lot of the group that I was with in the very back of the pack, they're like, these next two stops should be quick because they were shorter mileage. They're like, we'll just go out, we'll get those, and at least we've moved further down the list of stops here. So after like a short nap and stuff, ended up and left Camp Kippa. Got to Whiskey Row, I think it was a little before sundown, and because of my drop bags being so far, like, not in the right areas, my good headlamp wasn't until Mingus. And so I had already used my backup headlight all of the night and the first night, and then I was about ready to have to use what was left of it into the second night. And one of the guys let me borrow his headlamp. So after Whiskey Row, ended up went into Granite Dells and kind of ran off a headlamp that was getting dimmer and dimmer so it would last longer. And got into Fane Ranch. It was like, well, I can't go any further because my lights aren't gonna last much longer. So I had to sleep at Fane Ranch until the next morning before I could get up to Mingus Mountain. Oh. Yeah, so those were my plans that just had to be completely thrown out the window because everything was set up wrong.
Yeah. And it's like there you are. Now you're into day three, you know. But it's like, you know, just getting through, you're getting through the mental, you know, the mental aspect of it. Obviously, you still have some mental battles, but it's like at this point for day three, you know, you just have to plug away and keep going. You know, how did day three go for y'all?
For me, it was great because I knew my wife and kids were going to be able to meet me in like Cottonwood and Sedona area. So that was super exciting for me. So coming down to Jerome was a little bit of a pain in the ass, but then you get some easy roads, and then the trails out through Sedona were easy to move. It wasn't runnable for me. It should have been, but it was easy to keep moving through there. I mean, it got warm, like I said, but it was nice to see my wife and kids out there.
Yeah, day three was awesome. I Mingus Mountain, I think it was that morning I hit the top of Mingus Mountain. Because the night before, my wife pulled the plug on me because I was way too loopy. I was gonna keep going. She's like, "Nah, you're going to sleep." So day three was awesome. I got a good nap in and powered through.
Yeah, day three for me started off great and I felt awesome. And there was, you know, a couple low spots, but other than that, like, felt good up until, Kevin, was that day three that we decided to go up?
Yeah, we left
Sedona.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Day three was fine up until then.
Proceed.
So we get to the Sedona aid station, which is like mile 160 or something. And Kevin had gotten there, you know, sometime before me. And we'd seen each other, you know, for the last couple of days or whatever. And my sister and dad were out there, and they was like, and I was feeling like shit. I was like, not sure what to do. And because I didn't want to make that big climb up Kastner Canyon and, you know, cross the river and all that stuff in the middle of the night. And at this point, it was like, what, 8 o'clock or something, 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't want to go it alone, but my crew was like, hey, we saw Kevin over there and considering going or whatever. So Kevin and I decide to, you know, eat up, rest a little bit, and then we're going to go, you know, do this, you know, 17-mile section. And we go, and I think we're crossing the river around, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night or something. And Kevin makes it across just fine. And then I fall in neck deep into the water. Everything's soaked. My jacket's, everything is soaking wet.
Is that nighttime, you said?
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock at night, and it's fucking cold. Oh, my God,
dude. Yeah, the water's freezing.
Yeah, and I'm from Florida. So I'm like, all right, it's either go back 7 miles and try again tomorrow or huff at the 10 miles and, you know, try not to die. So I'm trying to figure out how to get my thermal blanket wrapped around me to survive. And Kevin's like, just cut a hole in it and make a poncho out of it. And so there I am with a fucking space blanket poncho hiking up Kastner Canyon.
He had a cotton tee that was kind of dry.
Yeah, he was put like that halfway over the top. Dry, and so I put that over top of the makeshift poncho, and that was a life. That idea, Kevin, saved my life. He died up there, and so then we're hiking up Kastner Canyon, and it's a pretty intense climb. And we're going slow, but we decide to sit down and take a little rest to get our heart rates down. And Kevin sits on a cactus.
and Justin, being the great guy he was, and probably a little loopy, starts pulling, you know, spines out of my ass.
Yeah,
he realizes
he's like, I can feel it. My butt. Where is it? I know there's one in there. And so we're pulling fucking spines out of Kevin's ass, and like, we're like, God damn, we should have stayed in bed and done some daytime. And, you know, go up a little bit more, and one of my trekking poles breaks. And so now here I am with one pole. And then we get up to we finish the climb. We get to a little water station there and think, like, smooth sailing from here. And then it starts, like, snow flurrying. And I'm like, God damn it. Like, here I am.
It was cold.
Yeah, it was cold. It was cold. And then, you know, I'm wrapping myself in my second space blanket, trying to keep my arms covered, and, you know, just trudging along this never-ending dirt road. And,
yeah,
you know, luckily we made it, and everything was fine, and nobody died. But fucking, it was touch and go for a little while. But that space blanket poncho, you should patent that, Kevin.
I don't think you could have had a worse day three.
Yeah, and it was like, I felt great in the beginning, and I was like, in the beginning of day three, I was like checking the leaderboard thinking, like, maybe I'll try and win this thing. Like, I'm feeling great. Like, where's Versteeg at? And the next thing I know, I'm like doing the polar bear plunge. Fuck.
It was brutal. And the markings up at the top of
there. Oh, yeah.
It was tough to find yeah. a way. I mean, we even met all four of us, are just, you know, partly because we're out of it and the markings were, it was really tough to find a way. We're just so frustrated and tired and cold.
The Gaia app is an absolute lifesaver for sure. Saved me a couple of times.
Yeah.
Especially wandering through that field doing circles.
Yes.
thinking birds are flying at me.
Well, for me on day three, I headed up Mingus Mountain to finally get to a drop bag that actually had something useful in it. And so I get up there and got my headlamp and two batteries. And for some reason, I got stuck in that aid station. I couldn't get out of it. I couldn't figure out what I needed to put in my pack and what I would need until I got to my next drop bag. So I could kind of tell that time was ticking down and I needed to get out of there. But I couldn't make up my mind on what I needed and what could go back in the drop bag. And so eventually I ended up, got out of there, decided that I would start running as I'm heading down Mingus Mountain. And then I realized that all of a sudden on the third day I could actually run. So pretty much ran most of the way down Mingus and then into Jerome, and hit Jerome right about the time that the sun was going down. I put my pack on and decided, well, should I take my headlamp out now or wait 15, 20 minutes and do it once I've already gotten out of the aid station? Well, I decided to wait until I got out of the aid station. So I'm about 15 minutes down the road and I'll pull out the headlamp, and one of the two batteries that I had for some reason just didn't work anymore. So now I was down to one battery that I knew from long haul would at least get me most of the way through the night. So going into this, I had to worry that I was going to be out in these fields again with no lights on. And so, of course, as the night goes on, my headlight's getting dimmer and dimmer, so it lasts longer, and ended up going through Dead Horse and Deer Pass and Deer Pass. The longer I was out there, the more I kept losing the flags, and I had to keep looking at the GPS to find out, to make sure I was on the path that I was supposed to be taking. So every time I was like, oh, you know, I'm moving pretty well, I would have to stop to look at the GPS and make sure I was on the correct path. Well, I get into Deer Pass thinking I've got 4 to 6 hours that I can kind of like recuperate, charge batteries and then get moving. And they're like, you've got 20 minutes to get out of the aid station. And so that was the very beginning. I think that was at 5 o'clock on day four. It was how I started day four.
Yeah. And obviously, jumping into day four, you know, I feel like day four, you've got to be very strategic. You know, you've got to run smart. You've already covered like a ton of miles at this point. You know, you just need to be able to survive and get through it. You know, how did day four go down?
Day four was definitely my worst day. Yeah, I hit like the lowest of the low. I saw my crew and they brought me some food, and I was like, I didn't realize it, but my wife was telling me once I was done, I was like, they were watching me trying to eat, and I was like shaking uncontrollably. But yeah, end of the day, I ended up sleeping for a couple hours at Munn's Park, and then I felt good as new again.
Yeah, for me it was you know, kind of uneventful, but it was just, you know, day four and just feeling exhausted, and it was, you know, vast majority of day four was hiking for me. And then that was when Kevin, we ended up at Walnut, right, with the whole RV.
Yeah.
So that was the end of
pretty much that whole day. I think I was just like maybe 10 or 15 minutes in front of Justin, and yeah, I would see his sister and dad at the aid station and say, you know, each one, he was like, hey, he's just a few minutes behind you. I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep pushing. I'm feeling good. And I'm sure if he knows that, you know, he'll keep going. And then I knew we'd meet up again for that fourth night. Again, it was just nice to have him. And his dad came out and paced us on that last section there.
Yeah, that was good. That was just another long section.
Yeah.
But Tuthill to Walnut was just, you know, through the night, and just have, you know, another body out there to keep moving was good.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, we didn't have to think. We just, I mean, he set a good pace, and we just kind of just dragged along behind him. So it was good.
Yeah, when I left Deer Pass, I pretty much pushed all through the night. I was having a really really good running day, and I pushed through the night. And I guess another one of the many mistakes I made on this was I hadn't been paying attention to cutoff times at all. So where everybody else is, they would show up and then just immediately turn around and go back out. I kind of forgot to look at those. And so when I got into Deer Pass and I was like right before cutoff, I didn't really get a chance to recover. And heading out toward the next water stop before Sedona, I was just completely out of it. Couldn't focus at any point. I was missing all the flags. Would see a flag and walk past it and then try to remember, did I see a flag or why am I heading this direction? And then it just got to the point where I was pretty much walking around in circles out there, because at one point, because I didn't realize what I was passing, and there was one person that was behind me, and all of a sudden I look up and he's running toward me, and the two sweepers were right behind him running, and I'm like, am I going the wrong direction? And they're like, yes. And I was like, oh crap. And then so I turned around and went with them, and that was pretty much the end of my Cocodona time. So I didn't make the cutoff, and neither did the other guy. We didn't make the cutoff at Sedona.
So you're going back for it next year?
Yeah, I'm already signed up.
All right.
I already have a crew for next year, so nice. It's going to be 100% better than it was.
You better bring like 4 headlamps.
Yeah, definitely going to do that.
Yeah. But yeah, because then you're coming into day 5, you know, it's all about finishing at this point, you know, you just got to get it done. You know, how did that final day go for the rest of y'all?
I think I slept some more that morning.
Yeah, I got a lot of sleep on this. It was pretty good. Yeah, I was just ready to be done, man. Like, Fort Tut Hill is about 211 miles. I think is that the aid station that the medical people ask you questions?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They asked me where I am, and I said Arizona. Like, well, you're not wrong. Yeah, I was just ready to be done, man. I felt pretty good that whole last day though. Getting to the top of Eldon with Pete's Meats, that was incredible. I had a pocket full of ribs going down that mountain.
Yeah, so Justin and I woke up in the cold van huffing gas fumes all night.
On top of the world.
And my wife was kind enough to drive out there, and she was gonna pace us the rest of the way in. So it was awesome to have, you know, again, fresh legs and fresh mind. And you know, some more conversation to finish out the day. So it was good. I mean, that climb is so tough, and I ended up taking a nap, like a 15-minute nap or something, right before we went up, because I just had to lay down, passed right out, and then we got up and kept moving along. But and we got up to the top of Eldon, had a Coors Light, and ate some food, and kept it going.
Did she want a pace, or was the vehicle out of gas?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it actually worked out good, because my wife came in with our minivan, and Justin's father and sister, who were stranded out there with a broken down camper van, they just took our van to the finish line. And so that worked out well. So yeah, she was happy to do it, but She was swearing as well going up Eldon. It wasn't just all the runners. Yeah. Yeah.
You guys get to the top at daytime or nighttime?
Daytime. We were up there around noon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was nice having Kevin's wife there, and we kept a good pace, having fresh legs, and she was on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She kept us moving, and she was like a drill sergeant out there. She refused to let any of us take the lead, and she was out there.
No. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So we kept a good pace and got up there and were able to relax up at Mount Eldon for a little bit. He said had a beer and just enjoyed the thought of being done soon.
Yeah.
Did you get the ribs?
No, I don't think they had anything up there when we were up there. No, they just had like pancakes like and
yeah.
But yeah, they had beer, so it was all that mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to the top like as the sun was going down, so it was just beautiful. I mean, that wind was brutal.
Oh yeah, that was intense, and the climb sucked. Holy shit!
Yeah,
and then you have to just trudge through snow at the last bit.
Yeah,
one last kick in the ass.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing. Like you're in Arizona. Who thought there'd be snow?
Yeah, we started off in 90 degrees, and now we're ended up in ankle deep snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because coming into the finish line, obviously you're coming into town. It's awesome because that for that live feed, we get to watch you for the most part come into that finish line. How those final miles go? Coming through town and across that finish line.
Well, the I don't know about you guys, but when that road, the fire road on Mount Eldon turned into single track again, my soul was crushed.
Yeah.
We were done with that.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, those last couple miles like on the road coming into the finish line it didn't even really feel real at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you cross the finish line. It's like what now? Yeah. What do I do with my life?
Yeah, for me at least, that was the like most relaxing 8 miles because it was not bad terrain. That once it turned into like once we got off the dirt road and went back into the trail again, that was like you said, a shock. But just knowing that like no matter what, like we're done soon. And then even once we got to the road and they were there with the live feed and he was going to follow us in, Kevin and I were still like, that's fine. We're still, going to walk for the majority of this. We'll pick it up towards the end. But right now we're still just cruising in.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exciting. I mean, it everything starts to come together and the last few days are already behind you and you're just looking to have another beer.
Yeah, with a goal of basically to just finish. It doesn't matter, like you just just stroll through the finish line and be done.
Yeah
Could you imagine going through all of that again but like actually competing?
No
somebody on your tail the whole time, I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, because like finally, you guys get to actually hold that belt buckle. What was it like holding that belt buckle?
Honestly, I forgot that you get one at the end, and then some lady came running over. She's like, "Did you get one?" And I was like, "No." And I was more excited to see my wife and kids there, and that it was over, and I could just put my feet up, and I didn't have to put them back down. that was like the best. Yeah.
Dude, same
with it is cool.
Like, yeah, I wasn't even thinking of the buckle. My family was there, my wife was there. It was just happy to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just ready for a hot shower.
Yeah.
An actual bed, not the back of the car.
Right.
Yeah, and going back to Derek, dude, you ran like a huge distance PR.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big difference from, I think when I did a loss, it was 118, and then ended up and got to Sedona at least, so that was 162, 163.
Wow.
So,
that's awesome, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, even for me, because I DNF'd one of the years, I DNF'd that long haul, even that DNF year, I think that was my best performance, at that race.
I feel like you can learn a lot from a DNF too, It really makes you think of what to change for the next time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, as soon as it was done, I was like, okay, well, just all my drop bags were set up wrong. I don't know. I'm rewatching the live feeds that they were that they have on YouTube, and I'm like, why was I so slow? How could I possibly move that slow? So yeah, I've already started. I was thinking about next year, and being that I'll have a crew and all my stuff will be with my crew, and then they can kind of move along and I can just grab what I need at each one of those aid stations rather than guessing the day or 2 days before on where I'm going to be. I think it'll be a complete game changer, and I think next year will be 100 times better.
I'll be tracking you, man.
Yeah, I feel like it's the only time that like stalking is totally okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize how many people were watching what I was doing and stuff until I would get to an aid station and turn on the wireless or the internet or whatever, and then get all these messages of, hey, we're watching this, or yeah, I'm at work and I've got another computer completely set up with with you on the other computer. So it was pretty interesting.
Oh, I know I did. I had one of my monitors dedicated to Cocodona. Yeah, and you know, I guess we can kind of start wrapping it up with, you know, what was the good, the bad, and the ugly out there for the Cocodona 250?
I think the good for me is just, you know, as usual, the people, meeting all the people and all the aid station volunteers and whatnot. Yeah. I don't know. I was trying to think of the ugly, but the bad for me was day four. That was rough, but I felt like I stayed on top of the hydration and nutrition pretty well, so that was a plus. Actually saw a lady, a runner, yell at one of the aid station volunteers, so that was probably the ugly. She was taking too long to get her bacon or something.
Wow.
I had to bite my tongue and walk away.
Yeah, I guess the good is, yeah, making it through, you know, feeling pretty good. I guess better than I even thought, and, you know, not... I thought I'd be really sore, and really wasn't sore, just achy, you know, holding the pack for that many days, and on my back was a lot, and my feet, but overall, I'm very happy with it, and it is, it's the people at the aid stations is what makes it that much easier, because it's like, if I just get there, you know, it's another 10 miles, and then I'll be, and you almost like get rejuvenated again, and you're back out there and feeling good again. But I guess the bad was the way that me and Justin were just going at that pace for the first couple of days. We lined up like the four longest stretches for every night. Every night was like a 16 mile, yeah, 17 or 17 and a half mile stretch at sundown. And that was my bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, pretty happy.
Yeah, for me, the good, like, I just love being out in the wilderness and in the trails, and, you know, just anytime that I can be out there doing that is awesome. But, you know, going even before that, the training leading up to it was just like, I've been in the best shape of my life, in, you know, huge thanks to, I gotten touch with Annie Hughes, who was you know, coaching me. She won Cocodona last year, third overall, and like got my training schedule for me, and like got me really prepared to do this. And, you know, so the training leading up to it was, you know, probably my favorite part. And then, you know, going into it just feeling prepared, and you know, being able to, you know, tackle everything, and, you know, like they say, get to the aid stations and, you know, get a little another boost of energy, and keep moving on, and the people you meet out there, and you know, it was just overall an awesome experience, and so it was just a great time all around. There's plenty of low moments for sure. I don't think anybody can do any sort of ultra or and not have some low moments in it, so, but that just comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed just being out there. The scenery was pretty incredible. I kind of wish I could have seen more of Sedona, since I had never seen that before. And what little bit I saw was pretty amazing. But I really enjoyed. I was running down the Senator Highway there in the middle of the night, and you could see everybody's headlights off in the distance, and you could see when they would turn around to see who was behind them, and just watching the headlights as you're going through the night was really interesting. As far as the bad, I guess it was maybe there wasn't as many open spaces where you could run there in the very beginning, a lot of it being washed out, or they had graded it and all the stones were all kicked out. Maybe that was the bad part, but I mean, I guess you'll have that with trail running. You get a little bit of everything with trail running. So, but I enjoyed it, and it was definitely a learning experience, and can't wait to go back and try it again.
Heck yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I also gotta say my family being there is probably the best part. My dad, my brother came in from Minnesota, my uncle from Boston, my wife came from Florida, obviously, and then my wife's mom and her husband were there as well, so I had quite the support system. Pretty great.
Yeah, Kevin and Justin, when did you guys realize, like, hey, we're two Florida pros out here?
Mm-hmm. It was I think it was day one. I came up behind him, and you'll have the little state flag on there.
Yeah.
And like we said, the first day you're just meeting so many people and talking, and we just happened to be going at the same pace in the same section for a while, so we talked a bit, and then, I don't know, it was probably day two again. We saw each other a little bit, and then it was by the third night we were pretty much like, neither of us said it, but we're just like, we're probably just going to end up finishing together.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
I was under the impression you guys knew each other.
No, nope. Yeah, we met around, it was probably after the popsicle stand.
Yeah.
Rocket Pops.
I think Kevin was ahead of me for, you know, the majority of it. Like you said, just by a couple minutes, my crew would say that they saw him just before me. But, you know, then we saw at Mingus, and then, you know, like you said, just, you know, we mostly tackled the night sections together, and then, you know, day three or whatever is when we just kind of stuck together and said, you know, fuck it, we probably did, I don't know, 70 miles or something of it together. And
yeah. It helped a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Because being out there, you know, hats off to anybody out there that either completed or attempted without a crew or pacer, because that is tough. I even having a crew out there, being able to tell them exactly what I need when I need it, was a game changer. I couldn't imagine trying to plan out ahead of time, not knowing exactly where I'm going to be, and then, you know, having my dad be able to pace me a little bit, and then being able to have Kevin there, and, you know, especially at the nighttime and when I'm, you know, getting ready to die of hypothermia or whatever, and have somebody out there to just, like, you know, suffer through it with you, just makes it, you know, that much more doable.
Oh yeah. Well, hey y'all, this was awesome.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
Time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice. Good Thank chatting you. With you guys.
Yeah, good job, everybody.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, have a good night.
All right, guys.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
See ya.
Later.
Bye.
And there we have it for part one of the Cocodona 250. And hey, next up, we've got Andy Barrett, Dave Krupski, Carmen Brockdorf, and Scott Davis. So we've got some more awesome stories from the Cocodona 250. And then, you know, of course, we've got that Keys 100 chat coming too. So it's going to be awesome to hear all about that. I heard it was hot out there. And hey, until next time, happy trails.